And welcome back with Dr. Cliff Pickover as we talk about his latest work, Death and the Afterlife. And Cliff, where can you lead people to pick up this wonderful read? Where can they find it?
Thanks very much. Yes, of course, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, they all have it. You can always go to Pickover.com, my website, and that has images. And I know your Coast to Coast website also has some images from the book, so that's great.
What fascinates you the most about the subject of death and the afterlife?
Well, one thing that fascinates me is how precious life seems to be. You know, if we look out as scientists at the universe, it seems like the universe is almost poised to allow us to exist in this sense, right? The stars have to behave in a certain way to produce carbon, which we need for our bodies, and you know, if the reactions, the nuclear reactions, were just a little bit different, there would never be carbon. If the universe expanded much faster than it expanded at the Big Bang, atoms would never form. If it expanded too slowly, it would all recollapse. So many things have come together to let us be here, that it makes me think at night, you know, how precious life really is. And even intelligent life like ourselves is quite precious. Like you, I believe there's probably alien life everywhere, but the route to intelligent species that, you know, drive spaceships, that's quite hard, if we just talk about evolution, because you need both intelligence and manual dexterity. So we have smart dolphins, but they don't have anything to manipulate the environment.
That's
much.
Right.
They don't have fingers. We have dexterous spiders. They're very good at manipulating the environment, but they don't have much of a brain. Chimpanzees have a little bit of both, but they're not particularly successful. And in some ways, like, the dumb rats and beetles, they've been very successful, evolutionarily speaking. So look at everything that happened, and then finally we're here. Makes the whole route to human beings seem rather special.
Well, let's get back to immortality again. How long do you think humans could last, realistically, in a lifetime?
Well, there's that whole field of transhumanism that started around 1957 and beyond, and people continually talk about the exactly your question. Can we be immortal through genetic manipulation? We're going to have body parts already replaced by artificial parts and robotics. Nanotechnology will be developed to help us cure diseases. You and I talked briefly about uploading your mind to a computer. We can't do that today. Who knows if we can ever do it, but it's a possibility. And we'll discover the biological basis of aging, so we'll age less and less. So your question, how long? Even if we could live for 1,000 years, it's a great question for your audience. Would you still be you? If George and Cliff were going for 1,000 years, right, gradually over the years we'd be changing a little, our personalities would change. Day to day, we don't notice it, right? I'm the same person I was a week ago and a month ago and pretty much a year ago. But imagine 1,000 years ago, 1,000 years into the future, if we lived that long, would we still be us? Or would we be gradually like a sort of a sugar cube dissolving in hot tea? You know, our old self would dissolve and the new you, 1,000 years, might have very little resemblance to the personality of you today.
Do you look forward to the future?
Yes, very much. And in fact, I often ask my friends, if you could use time travel and go back to any time in the past or any time in the future, on the condition once you arrived, would you stay? I asked my friends, well, would you go back to the past and stay and go back into the future? And I get various answers. Some like to go back in time a little bit, or 50 years, 100 years, or, 1,000 years. But for me, to get at your question, here's my secret. I would go into the future because I want to see where it's all headed. If you go into the past quite a bit, right, women's rights was terrible. Medicine that we modern medicine we appreciate today, that was terrible. There's a lot of bad stuff in the past, even though we might romanticize it. But if me and you could escape into the future 10 years, 50 years, and see where it's all headed, diseases will probably be cured. who knows what computer technology will be evolved, but there is a risk. We don't know for sure that humans will be in a great shape and wars will be avoided. We can only hope so.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's go to the phones. They're lining up here for you. We will go to Aaron in Alaska to get things started west of the Rockies. Aaron, go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering if your guest knew about the Viking tradition of El, which is spelled E-L-L. It wasn't a fire and brimstone place. It was snow and ice. The linguistics really kind of sound like hell, and that was what it was to them, was someplace cold and not hot. And I'll take that off the air. How's that?
All right. Have you heard of anything like that, Cliff? I've heard of things like that.
Yes, and the guest has an interesting point. I mean, the caller has an interesting point where the word hell is transmuted through different cultures, and similar words have been used for a hell. You know, in Norse mythology and Vikings, right? I talk about Viking ship burials where people are actually buried in the ship, or at least the great rulers. But also, I talk about this bridge called Bifrost, spelled B-I-F-R-O-S-T, and that's the rainbow bridge that goes from Earth to Asgard. And that's where some of the ideas of hell or El come in. But this bridge is beautiful because it's something where the gods can use it to go back and forth, and eventually, in the end of days, it's destroyed in this Norse mythology.
All right, let's go next to Allison in the state of Maine, first-time caller. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning, George. And I got to tell you, I've listened to you since the first day you started.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm 62, and I admire you so much, and I think the world of you.
Thank you.
For Cliff, I kind of found out tonight that I might be going into the afterlife a little quicker than I thought.
Well, let's not do that. What's going on?
So I wanted to know how assured does he feel that the afterlife maybe might not be as difficult as some of the things we've experienced here, or if we're going to have enough of the lessons so that we can get to the afterlife and do okay, or anything like that? And thank you, George, so much, and God bless you.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very big question, and it's very hard for little Cliff here to speculate on, you know, your individual journeys to death in the afterlife. All I can say is, right, we want to make life as beautiful and as happy as we can. You know, I'm a fan of everything we're doing in America. And America is maybe not leading in this. I have relatives that are, you know, having a difficult time right now as they get older. And I hope we continue with all the different ways that humans have been experimenting with hospice, with medication, and, of course, with spirituality to make whatever transition there is as beautiful and as happy as we can. And if you see, you want to get more glimpse of what other cultures have thought on this very question, that's part of why I wrote the book. Because even though our ideas have changed and our science have changed, when you look at things like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the Egyptian Book of the Dead, it at least instills a sense of wonder. I think one of the challenges of modern society is that many of us no longer have the feeling that we're surrounded by the unseen, by mysteries. And for me, I find it very important to cultivate that sense of perpetual mystery. Even when I just go out in the morning to work, I hear the wind through the trees. I imagine some vast beings blowing the leaves. This may sound crazy to your listeners, but cultivating that sense of mystery is very important, I think, to our lives.
Cliff, since you've been doing this over all these years, has your life personally changed because of the things you've uncovered, the things you've learned?
I think it has to a great degree, and that's probably why, you know, I've written so many books. Many of my friends say, you know, why are you compelled? You know, I have over 50 books now and dozens and dozens of foreign language translations on almost any topic you can imagine. And I think each book I write transforms me, and that's one of the reasons. You know, each book is almost like a getting a PhD in a field, and as you go out into your life, your daily life, or drift off to sleep tonight, or the next day, filling your head with knowledge of the past, with mythology, with science, it can only help give you a wide perspective and a sense of awe about how far humans have come.
If you were invited to the other side, what do you think you'd see?
I wonder if what we see is partly a reflection of our own projections and experiences in this world, or when you get deep into the brain biology, like we were touching on briefly, DMT, dimethyltryptamine, people actually often see when taking this drug that beings, they call them machine elves, that seem to be tending the fabric of reality. And of course, we could say those are just purely hallucinations. But on the other hand, there's often a commonality of vision, a commonality of experience with this drug, where people see ornate temples and palaces and even images of cats and other creatures. And it makes you wonder, does that tell us anything about reality? Does it tell us about the ancient myths, or Jung talks about collective unconsciousness and archetypes? You asked me what I will see. I'm giving you a long, long answer.
You're pretty observant.
Yeah, it's a long answer. I don't know, but it's so fascinating to think about why cultures through different ages all around the world, and even with some near-death experiences, they've seen some commonality, and it makes you just wonder what it's saying.
Let's go to Carter, driving in Louisiana. Good morning, Carter, and thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call. Long time, I guess, short time listener, about 5 years. I'm a 32-year-old offshore turbine specialist. I love your show. It makes me, it keeps me awake. I do a 14-14 rotation. I have a question about time travel, in a sense that a society, I guess, past time would probably look at today's society and say, wow, we travel in time because we've shortened the distance of travel. So looking into the future, in the sense that alternate universes and other universes that we need to travel to, how do we shorten that? Because I think that's the issue with getting to that next point, is shortening that time even further. Do we use wormholes? What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. C.S. Lewis, the great theologian, he said the great distances that might be separating intelligent life is a part of divine quarantine to make contact between the different societies in the universe, you know, difficult. Time travel, you mentioned, in a way, time travel is fact. It's not just speculation. We know that by traveling at high speeds, it's possible to age slower and travel into the future. Travel into the past is much more speculative, but there have been ways proposed that don't seem to go against Einstein's relativity, that involve wormholes and great masses and the idea of parallel universes. I think at this time, we don't know. And even if the universe presents difficulties in traveling through space and time, perhaps exploring the inner mind will give us routes to new ways of thought and adventure. In fact, you know, when I talk to people about the idea of living in a simulation like the Matrix, I say, you know, would you actually choose to live in such a simulation? And they say, of course not. I want real reality. But if in a simulation you could love more deeply, have great adventures, think more clearly, be smarter, whatever, and have hundreds of years in the simulation of bliss, well, maybe that wouldn't be so bad.
Maybe not. Fairbanks, Alaska, it's David Stern on Coast to Coast. David, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I really am enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I just have a question for your guest. Only because I'm a Catholic, and we were kind of raised to remember the dead in our prayers and in our thoughts, and to talk with them and to ask them to pray for us. And I remember I knew a medium up in North Dakota. Her name was Lashina. She passed away. But I remember asking her about spirits, about ghosts that kind of can disturb a house, not in a bad way, but just noisy or just, you know, different disturbances. I said, well, what do they want? And Lashina says they just want to be acknowledged sometimes. And I was wondering what your guest's opinion is on when we remember them in our prayers and in our thoughts and when we take time to reflect on them or speak to them, does that have a difference? Does it have an impact on them as they're in the afterlife? And I just want your guest's opinion on that, and I'll take that off the air. Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Go ahead, Cliff.
Sure. Well, one, this gets very close to the listener's question. Many have speculated that what we are today as human beings is not just us, ourselves, right? There's one idea.
A combination of, right?
Yeah, researchers have this idea of social prosthetic system, you know, view of relationships with family members, other people. You are not just you, but you're a combination of you and all the people who know you and remember you. And in some sense, you're not dead when you die because of the memories that people have of you. You're almost existing maybe in a lower resolution copy. And so in a way, that's another kind of immortality, you know, the memories people have of you, the interactions you have with others makes you more than just yourself. And I have a whole entry on ghosts in the book. And all I can say is that the history is very interesting because it goes back ancient times. And, you know, now that we're getting near to Halloween, right, one of the earliest classic accounts of like a haunted house with a chain clanking ghost followed by an investigation goes back to the, you know, Greeks. And the story is classic. This is, you know, about 100 AD where, you know, a skeleton is found. It's not properly buried. It's properly buried, and the soul can be at rest. So clearly humans have been thinking about this for a long, long time.
I think Neanderthals also buried their dead, didn't they?
Yes, it's very clear that they arranged them in interesting ways, which says that they've given it some thought. And there's speculations that they may have even lined their graves with flowers. And that, if that's true, it's very hard to know back so long because evidence of all this decays through time. But there's some evidence, and if that's true, it means they, you know, gave a certain sort of thought and respect and perhaps thought about what lies beyond, even back pre-human times.
We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast with Cliff Pickover. We'll take final phone calls and your stories. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where you get all the latest information. And don't forget to download the new Android app, Paranormal Date. It's there for you. It's free. We're working on the iPhones now. And welcome back. Cliff Pickover with us. We'll get to your final phone calls. Fast night indeed. Your other books, Cliff, and I just very briefly want to ask you about the one we talked about some time ago, too, the physics book, From the Big Bang to Quantum Resurrection. What is your take on the Big Bang? I'd love to get your explanation on what you think happened to jumpstart the universe.
Huh.
See, I think it was always here.
You don't ask the simple questions, right? That's a powerful one.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like about 13.7 billion years ago, the universe the spacing was compressed, right? Whatever matter existed started as a point and exploded from there. And the ultimate fate of the universe depends on the nature of gravity and the speed of the expansion. You probably have heard of this stuff called dark matter and dark energy that controls. But what happened before the Big Bang or what kicked it off? These are, you know, could be eternal mysteries. I mean, it looks like it all started at the super high, super dense region of space-time. Space itself expanded. Atoms didn't even exist in the beginning. And eventually, electrons coalesced around protons. And that kick-started it all. Eventually, the universe lights up with stars. And we're lucky for that. For humans to be here, not only do they have to be stars, but they have to become furnaces that cook up the heavy elements that are in our bodies, like calcium and iron, and then explode and kick those elements into outer space. That coalesces around other stars, and here we are today. So what started the Big Bang? I don't think we actually know.
And old George's theory, it's always been here. The universe has always been here.
Well, and there's also notions of cyclical universes where you have these huge things called membranes that splat together, like taking two pieces of pancakes and smashing them, and you get other universes. I think we just don't know for sure, and we certainly don't know the fate of the universe. We used to think the whole universe would re-collapse. Now we think it's going to expand faster and faster until something called a big rip comes, where it's so fast, even planets and atoms split apart. But let's not worry about that now. That's so far in the future. Who knows what we will learn in the coming centuries.
Okay, now we go back to the phones. Joe's in Lakewood, California, and now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I just wanted to tell you, you were talking about the afterlife, and me and my friend wrote a book, Gangster at Heaven's Gate, and we made light of it. St. Peter recruits these tough guy souls, and they'll be given clemency, pass into heaven if they go to earth and stop these untimely deaths with drug overdoses and drive-by shootings. And it's very funny, and it gets intriguing, and then it gets dark. But it, I was trying to call to find out how to get on your show, get the book on your show, and it was a coincidence you were talking about the afterlife.
Here we are. There we are. And Cliff, while we got him on the phone, with Joe's on the phone, why don't you tell us about where we can get your books?
Thanks. Well, Amazon.com is great, BarnesandNoble.com, and from where images and pictures and the table of contents, you could also go to my own website, pickover.com, P-I-C-K-O-V-E-R.
There you go, Joe, and good luck to you there. Next up on our list here, we go to Delaware. Jim is waiting, and Jim, you're on the show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George, I just want to relay a lucid dream I had a few years ago.
All right.
For the benefit of your listeners, in my lucid dreams, I'm thrust into them. So I enter this room, I turn and see it's rectangular. The walls are made of pearl. The floors are fashioned out of pearl. There are tiles fashioned out of pearls. There's this beautiful, colorful tile that trimmed the room running parallel to the wall. So I knew I was going to wake up, so I crouched down near the corner to examine them. And they were precious stones such as emeralds and rubies, and rooted into the floor. Then I stood up and woke up, and I was in awe and rejoicing that God spares no expense for his children.
No, that is absolutely true. He does not. Interesting, though, in the lucid dream. And you can get into that dream at will, Jim?
No, I'm thrust into it.
Once you're in it, can you control it?
Oh, once I'm in it, I know I'm a dreaming. I got to hurry up and scout out the dream, see what I can pick up on. I have several dreams like that.
Well, Cliff, in your 50-plus books, have you done books on dreaming?
Yes, I'm very interested in lucid dreaming and divination, but you're... listener brought something very interesting up. He saw visions of pearls and jewels and stones. That theme, whether it's in dreams or in myths or in these drug-induced visions with dimethyltryptamine, is recurring. One of my favorite examples in 2000 BC, the Epic of Gilgamesh from ancient Mesopotamia. Gilgamesh is the hero, and he ends up going into something like an afterlife. And it's filled exactly with what your listener is talking about. It's a sparkling garden of jewels and pearls and coral. And we see that in visions in the New Testament of the world to come. And we see that in DMT-induced visions, people see these ornate palaces and jewels and things you could hardly conjure up on your own. So that seems to be some interesting part of reality or maybe the human brain and mind that the theme of jewels and sparkling things seems to be recurrent in our myths, our dreams, and our religions.
All right. It's Cody now in Idaho. Cody, you're on with Cliff Pickover. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Cliff. First-time caller. Basically, I wanted to know, has there been any issues with people, like, going crazy, facing their own mortality, basically? And then the second question is, what's your take on the city showing up in the sky in China?
Well, you talk about people going crazy. I am interested in the psychology and psychiatry of some of the topics we're talking about. One of the entries in the book is called Walking Corpse Syndrome, or it's called Cotard Syndrome. And these are people today that believe they have lost organs and died, and they're just animated corpses, and that their bodies are machines. This gets a little scary, right? And it can be treated. It seems to be based on something happened in the human brain. It's a real syndrome called Walking Corpse Syndrome. And it's scary because they can refuse to eat and spend time in graveyards and coffins. And there's a whole host of psychiatric conditions that get close. There's another one I talk about, Capgras, where you think your family, they're all imposters. You know, they look like your wife or kids, but they're imposters. So the human brain can be just a little bit off and be a little bit scary. So the idea of the China, I'm not familiar with what China thing you mentioned with something.
There's a picture on the internet. China has been building vacant cities. They're getting ready for something, God knows what. But there was a picture on the internet of the image of the entire city floating in a cloud. I think it was like a reflection, some kind of a anomaly like that. But it was really, really weird.
Interesting.
We've got it on our Facebook. If you want to go up there, Cliff, and take a look at it. It's very strange. Yeah, but they're building cities that are empty. Skyscrapers, empty, getting ready for something. Who knows what?
What do they know that we don't know,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. An influx, to be sure. Let's take some more calls here on Coast to Coast. We go to Roger in Florida. Good morning, Roger. You're on with us.
Hey, George. What I'm about to say is, it may seem unbelievable, but I actually believe that I received revelation a few days ago about what the nature of us really is. And the best way I could put it is, I believe we are baby intentions, baby bubbles of intentions in a quantum universe. We're the only hard and fixed laws are moral laws. And the reason why I say that is, why do I say baby intentions? Well, Jesus himself taught us that if we had faith the size of a mustard seed, we can tell a mountain to raise up and plant itself in the ocean, and it would. Because I believe Jesus came here as a being of full intention to teach us that this is our potential, that we are intentional beings, and there is no real demarcation between the afterlife and this life. It's all one universe, one spectrum, and we are just bubbles of intention navigating this spectrum of this quantum universe. And how in the world did I ever come to this understanding? Is I was sort of like trying to say I have a sense of an accomplishment that I must make in life, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm just an ordinary Joe Schmo, and I can't accomplish this. And then this revelation came to me as a way of supporting the idea of my destiny. And it's just a profound revelation where you can even understand heaven and hell through this one understanding.
Well, that's his interpretation, Cliff, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and in fact, you mentioned baby intentions or something of that nature. I like the metaphor that people in the Baha'i faith use where they say this world is like we're fetuses. What could a fetus really know about life in our world, you know, before it's born? The analogy then goes to the next level. What could we humans really understand about possible afterlives? And I love that metaphor because whatever we believe, it shows the limitations of our mind, and we're sort of conditioned by our realities today, it's hard to actually imagine what can lie beyond.
Am I still with you guys?
Yes.
I would, since I have the opportunity, I would like to ask you guys and the listeners to go to newamericanspring.org, which is what I consider my destiny, and that is to form a new people's movement in the United States, precisely in line with what your last guest was talking about, a new people's movement that is not the Tea Party, not the Bernie group, but something that truly comes from the grassroots, where the people take control back of their government. And I see myself as this is my destiny, to lead this American revival. So, and this is the context in which I received that revelation of the quantum potential of human beings. So, I mean, if you're curious, then check it out.
All right. Well, we'll do that. Thank you. Thank you indeed. Time for a few more calls here, Cliff, and we're going to wrap things up. But I want to thank you right now for joining us again. It's been way too long.
Thank you. It has been great.
Okay, let's go now to Mark in Santa Monica, California. Mark, you are on the air with us. Go ahead, sir. Good to have you with us.
Hey, George. How are you? Thank
Good.
You very much for taking my call. Cliff, I just wanted to sort of your concept about, you know, you backing up the Big Bang Theory. I just wanted to kind of debunk that right now, if that's possible. I agree with yours. I don't believe there's any sort of reality for Big Bang. Because, all right, number one, if you were to observe nothingness, there's no such thing as nothingness, because there has to be someone there to observe it. So if you can sort of frame nothingness for me, there's no way it can exist. There's no such thing as nothing, because it takes something to observe nothing, if you gather my meaning. So I agree with George that, you know, reality and the nature of the universe is eternal, is unlimited, is infinite, is always has been, always will be, always was, and is. And that's just the only reality that's actually measurable. And I also disagree with the concept of time, because in and of itself is completely subjective, you know, and distance as well. I mean, if you look at like a day on the Earth for you or I, George, or for Cliff, it's 24 hours. But for an ant, the distance that it may take us, you know, 5 minutes to walk a mile, but to an ant, what would that be?
That's a good point.
Would that be?
And Cliff, let's get your thoughts on some of this, because we haven't had a chance to really talk about time yet, which fascinates me. And obviously it fascinated Stephen Hawking as well, because he wrote a great book about it. But what is time, as far as you're concerned?
Well, time is very hard to define, and it runs in different ways depending on the observer and the speeds they're traveling at. Einstein had the special theory of relativity, which says that if I take a spaceship and travel at high speeds, my time is different than yours. That's very hard to warp your mind around. And the general theory of relativity says gravity affects time. So in theory, the time traveling in your basement in your home, I mean, the time ticking of a clock is different than the time on your roof just because of gravity. Now, of course, that in that case is very tiny, the difference. But if you're going near a sun or a black hole, time seems to slow down for you relative to someone away from that high gravity. So just like your listener says, time is hard to understand. Einstein had the theory of space-time, where space and time are somehow intimately connected. You can't really talk about them separately. It is a mystery, and one wonders more and more what we will learn about time. I mean, there have been real experiments that show time can be changing based on your speeds, where you go up with an atomic clock into an airplane, and the clock really is ticking different relative to someone sitting on the ground.
David's in North Dakota, first-time caller. David, good morning.
Hi, I'm doing good. I was just wondering, I had a couple of questions about like what he thought the possibility was that we're already in the afterlife and this is purgatory.
All right, let's go with just that one because we've only got a minute left. What if we're already in the afterlife, Cliff?
Yes. What branch of reality are we in? What came before us? Deep mysteries. If we even go into one of the topics I like is that simulation, where is the universe a simulation? Will humans be able to simulate reality? People say, does it have to be perfect? You know, won't you know there's glitches and there's problems? But when you think about it, when you go to sleep at night and dream, there's all sorts of bizarre anomalies that you don't realize you're dreaming. So even if our reality was imperfect and was simulated, or in some strange, like your listener says, an afterlife, you might not know it. And for people who say that the mind and brain is so special we could never actually replicate or simulate it, I leave them with this thought. You know, if your memories and pattern, your thoughts and emotions are based on the patterns of your neurons in the brain and the way they interconnect and affect one another, in theory, you might be able to make a copy of your brain in the movement of tree branches or bicycle parts.
Wouldn't it be great to make a copy of your brain? Cliff, thanks so much. His book, of course, it's a great read, Death and the Afterlife. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borrelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.